Well, I'm Dave Slamp, and I want to welcome you officially to this session concerning the results of the Sunday School. And what we're talking about is as people come to the Lord and as they get involved in the Sunday School, what can we do? What are maybe some more creative ways or some inventive ways that we can tie them in and help them feel connected and related? The idea is if that happens, the chances are less that they would become disinvolved and possibly stop coming, even hurt their faith. So I'm glad that you guys have come today. Hope you just feel at home. Kick off your shoes if you want to. Take a little nap if you need to, but let's pray and we'll get underway. You ready? Here we go. Thank you, Father, for this day and just a gorgeous day out there. So thankful for your blessings in many ways. We're grateful for health and for our families, our churches. And I'm especially thankful, Father, for these men and women who give of themselves, who are here because they love you. Nobody forced them to come. It's something that we want to do because of what you've done for us. We want to serve you, and I know that they want to serve you wholeheartedly and effectively. That's one of our main desires, that we would be effective about involving people, serving them, helping them grow and mature spiritually. We want to help, want your help to that we would conserve the results of the Sunday School and that the lessons that are taught would be very significant in people's lives. We ask it together in Jesus' strong name, and everybody said, amen. Okay, great. Welcome. Come right on in. And if others come in and don't have a book, if those of you near them might just mention their little notes at each side, whichever door they come in, okay? If you could help them do that, I'm sure they would appreciate that. Again, welcome. Glad you're here. And are you having a good time at Bass? I am, I'll tell you that, very much so. And I'd even rather be here in the best rest home in the state, I'll tell you. It is good to be in God's house and with God's people. Well, we're talking about conserving the results of the Sunday School. And here's just in Matthew 28, 19 and 20, very familiar scripture. In the Great Commission Sunday School, we're talking about conserving the results. And the a central part of that is teaching them to obey. The objective of that, though, is to make disciples. Now, Jesus has commissioned us to instruct every believer in the meaning of Christian lifestyle and what it means to be a fully devoted follower of Christ. Winning people to Christ is only the beginning of the process. We talked about the offensive unit in one of the other sessions. The idea that it'd be those ministries that reach out and try to draw people in. We talked about small groups. We talked about Sunday School in different ways earlier. Being on the offense. Now, not being offensive. A little different. You know, it's not, you approach me and say, turn or burn, you know, and whatever. No, we're talking about witnessing in a positive way, drawing them in, but taking initiative, being proactive. And trying to reach people, impact them, draw them in a variety of ways. We discussed even small groups as a part of that, and a number of other things in other sessions. This one is more about what we would call the defensive unit. In other words, the ministries and programs that do one or more of these things. That number one, ministries that protect new Christians against Satan's attack. Very important. And I think this should be on your notes. Do you have a place for these? Okay, you've got it there. Excellent. Help new Christians, protect them against Satan's attack. Number two, ministries that raise them up to spiritual maturity. Very important. Helping men and women become spiritually mature. I'm noticing, in fact, I saw it in this conference. There is what we call at our booth, a thing called the Spiritual Growth Survey. And we almost sold out of them. I didn't bring a whole bunch, but there have been probably 18 to 20 people come by and they wanted specifically that spiritual growth survey. Spiritual gifts inventory or survey, there are a lot of those around. They help you know what you do well and what your passion is and what God's calling you to do. But spiritual growth will evaluate, help you objectively evaluate depth of commitment in 12 different areas of life. It has to do with everything from missions, worship, commitment to the word, involvement in prayer, stewardship, education, the whole thing. The idea here is that when we talk about the defensive unit, that is, once people have come to Christ, how do we help them stay dedicated and involved in Christ. Thirdly, ministries that help them grow in grace and faith and love and grow in fellowship, right? The things that cause them to move on. That's what we're after. That's what we're talking about. In this session, we look closely at a few of the tools, different tools. Some of them have been used before, have been left in the toolbox unused for some time. There are others that are new, which can be used better than they have in the past. Maybe we can kind of revisit how they're used. Notice that every tool has a handle, something that you or I can take hold of. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about. What are the tools of helping people stay vital in their faith and involved in the Sunday school? To do this, one approach is to build what we call a team, for lack of a better term, a team of Sunday school on the three D's. A group of leaders, a team of men and women, whether it's in your class, or it could be children, teens, or adults, and it could be in your Sunday school as a whole or in your church as a whole. But building a team of men and women who, number one, or first of all, develop great commission teams. And the idea is that in classes, use team teaching, and we've done that for years. Why not organize and develop great commission outreach teams in a class that has people that know each other well and in a class that needs to follow through with what we know to do and draw people in to the class, assimilate them? Why not do that in Sunday school classes, maybe in all departments of the Sunday school? Just a thought. Business and industry is fully aware of the value of teaming, and sometimes they're called work groups and so on, but why not in the Sunday school? Why not bring together the most dedicated people around this, specifically the Great Commission? These teams should include the following. Here are just some suggestions. Leaders who want to lead and focus in outreach and evangelism. Leaders to promote and oversee the outreach ministry. And outreach can take different forms. It could be special events. It could be socials with classes. It could be small groups, a number of ways, could be events like camps. If you're working, are any of you teaching children right now? You have the class you teach is for children? Okay, any for teenagers? You teach, okay, any junior high or middle school? God bless you, sir. We love you. Little prehumans there, okay. you got to love any junior high teacher, amen? Got to, okay. And the rest of us teach adults, I'm guessing. How many of you teach seniors? Okay, two or three of you. Excellent. How about singles? Anybody teach a single adult class? I love singles. Do you? Good for you. Okay? The idea is that in all these age groups, whether single, married, whether young or old, there are ways that we can reach out. And it's a matter of finding the one that fits you, fits the people the best. Then letter C, ministries that challenge each class to involve prospective and new students. Now this one is to me a very, well, I wouldn't say difficult. It's probably pretty easy to involve. It's a matter of actually doing it that's the hard part. We can probably think of a number of ways that we can involve people who are new in our class. But actually following through on that and doing it to me is a little more difficult. You've seen this happen. We talked about this a little bit at one time in one of the seminars yesterday. I have had a couple of times, fortunately not more than that, where people have said at exit interviews, when we've asked them, what do you like about the church, what fit you, that kind of thing, if they're new to the church, and many people, you know, at least in our church, the most common thing they say is the friendliness, the warmth, the closeness of the people, and it's a church of over 900 in regular attendance. So that, we love that. We're glad that that's there. We know the reason is that we have deeper fellowship in the small groups. But the idea here is that when they do the exit interviews, they will sometimes say, and I don't like to hear this, I've heard it, I think, twice, is everybody was so friendly with each other, and I didn't feel included. Now, I don't know that that's a serious problem. If you hear it once, it's serious, right? But they were standing around, apparently, being really friendly and visiting with one another. And here's a new person that comes in. And rather than drawing them into the conversation, apparently, they were left out. And people went ahead being friendly with each other. Now, hopefully, that's never happened in California, automatically, right? You know, that's up in Oregon where they have problems, they have ducks, and you know, they have beavers and crazy animals. Nothing like the, by the way, any USC fans here? One! Oh, my man. Okay, yes. Okay. Well, I won't go any farther than that because apparently we're a minority. You know what I'm saying? Okay. But we could talk about some other teams. I'd probably 49ers. Or most people right here would be what, 49 or would you be Raiders? Probably more. Okay. Great. Oh, sorry. It's got real quiet. I'll keep moving. The whole idea, involve perspective and new members. That's what we're after, involvement and new people. You won't do everything they come up with. That is, if a team starts coming up with ideas, you won't do everything that they come up with. But that's not the point. The purpose is to get leaders thinking and talking about how to impact people and then how to conserve them, which is what this session is all about. Our objective is to at least try some innovative, some creative ways to impact the world, and specifically to hold on to those who do come to Christ. The second is to design a Sunday school clinic and talk about in that clinic the health of retaining the people who are there. This isn't done very often. I do remember hearing about this being done a number of years ago. Here's the idea. It's just an innovative way to evaluate where your church, where your Sunday school is coming from. When we're ill, we go to a clinic for diagnosis, right? We go to a doctor. Get a prescription, probably. Why not do the thing for a Sunday school? And I put sick in there. I'm not sure that's the best, but let's say ill. A Sunday school that is not growing, that doesn't have a positive atmosphere about it. Maybe a Sunday school in which some of the people have kind of settled into just doing it because they always did it, rather than finding objectives, specific goals that they would try to reach for Christ, people for Christ. But anyway, based on sound principles of Christian education and approaches to evangelism, why not have a clinic? Why not begin bring in a specialist? That's somebody that's 50 miles away from home and has a briefcase. Okay, bring in a specialist. And maybe ask a neighboring pastor to examine the Sunday school, to kind of walk through the organization with you. Ask him to look at your outreach and discipling efforts and so on. And here's a tip. Be sure to get somebody at least 50 miles. Oh, there it is. And who has a briefcase. That's definitely. It's better, actually, the real experts are the guys with the overhead projectors and computers. Okay, those are the real guys. They really know what they're talking about. I'm being facetious, of course. Create and fill out a clinic evaluation. Suppose you just create a 3 or 4 page kind of how are you doing on this, on that? How do things look? Get some fresh eyes to look at the class. Has it gotten tired? I don't mean the people, I mean the class. Does the room look dated? Does there need to be some paint, some fresh paint put on the walls? Is the atmosphere welcoming? Is it well lit? Is it handicap accessible? And then what about the teachers? When they prepare, do they just get something out of a book and regurgitate that to the class? Or do they dig into the word too? And what they are teaching, something they experience and they're living, not just a thing that they're supposed to tell people about? Do you follow those kinds of diagnostic questions? Are you with me on that? I don't know if that's clear or not. That's what I'm after, is just some kind of a way to have a kind of a Sunday school clinic and check what you're doing against the qualities and the values that you believe are important. Have your guest doctor report to maybe the church board, the Christian Education Committee, if you have elders in your church, whatever, and help them then catch a fresh vision. And after the clinic visit, build on the strengths that you discovered and assign your leaders 3 or 4 areas in which each age group there might take the medicine and treat any sicknesses that have been found. So you're really looking for strengths to build on and trying to identify weaknesses and fix those. If you discovered, for example, that your teachers were just kind of going through the motions, okay, and that there wasn't, or let's say there wasn't personal care of the class members, the teachers were basically going through the lesson and it was interesting and they loved the people loved them, but that's it. There isn't the engagement between those people to help them literally move ahead in their walk with Christ, their spiritual maturity level, and so on. You can address that in teachers' meeting or training, or next year say, everybody come to Bass, not just the 3 of us, but everybody in the Sunday school who teaches come and be a part of getting further training. Now, if O means offense, this is the big D. And this is defense. This is the third part of designing, kind of dealing with the need to conserve people. The offensive unit concentrate on moving ahead in outreach and personal lifestyle, evangelism, and so on. The offensive unit may be made up of every person and ministry designed to reach out. It could include, for example, VBS people, children's programs, if there's a van or bus ministry of some kind, small groups, everything which reaches out, attracts new people, draws them in, that kind of thing. Camps could be a part of that. If people lead summer camps, those people could be challenged to guide people or help them to get back in. There are three types of settings in almost all churches. And some of this, this relates to what we were talking about this morning. A few of you were there. I'm going to describe it a little differently. It's not the three L's we talked about. It's different than that. But the question is, do you have these types of settings that we'll describe here? The first is the informal one. It's non-threatening. It's casual. It's maybe it's unstructured, somewhat relaxed. We could be talking about informal parties or socials or trips for golf or ski trips, retreats, all those kinds of fun, informal things. Are you tracking with me at that point? The whole idea is casual, informal, non-structured. There are devotions along the way, and there may be some things that you would do that are structured, but the main part is doing things that attract people, the informal social kinds of things. Secondly, the introductory type settings. And the question here is, these are those places which spiritual principles are embraced and the gospel is generally explained. That could be a specific retreat, could be a spiritual renewal retreat. Testimonies are common. Bible study takes the form of devotionals. The door is open for discussion. Some groups can do this. I would love to do this in our church. I think in every church there needs, and I don't know what you'd call it, I think there needs to be a class in which people come in for 8 or 9 weeks. And maybe it's called New Believers, New Beginnings, some kind of a class that is designed to cover the basics of biblical studies. You know what I'm saying? If there are people these days who don't know the Lord, don't come from a Christian background, and now start coming to our church, the question is, what do we provide for them to just give them the basics? Some classes may intimidate them. You and I have some classes that they'd come in, and these people have thick Bibles, not just Bibles, they have thick Bibles, and they bring a commentary under one arm, and you know, they sit down and they dig into it, and they're talking about the four-source document theory to the synoptic problem, and they're discussing who Ashurbanipal was and when Artaxerxes lived, and these guys are sitting there looking at each other. What is he talking about? I don't know. I don't understand that, you know, we're talking about stuff that's way down the road from maybe where and the more secular society is, the more this kind of approach is needed. It could be the beginning of a brand new class that becomes the cutting edge for your Sunday school. A class that is for new beginnings. The people who are coming to Christ. I got the idea originally from North Point Church out of Atlanta. And some of you know Andy Stanley's son is the pastor there. Church isn't doing bad. They're at 14,000 now. They're doing okay. We're not quite there. They're light years ahead of us. But they built the church on three ideas. One, small groups. Two, children, interesting. And three, worship. That's it. They do other things, but they are secondary. They concluded as they started the church that less is more. And so one of the things they do is this introductory, I don't think it's called New Beginnings, but Fresh Start. Something, you know what I'm saying? Something like that says to people, if you don't know the Bible and you don't know a lot of theology, this is for you. And we even state that maybe publicly. My guess is there are people who have been around a few years and don't know the Bible but don't want to admit it. And so they stay out of Sunday school. Do you think so? Okay, so if we have a New Beginnings class, or if we have a Fresh Start class, something like that. Yes, sir?
Yeah, our church actually has
good.
Oh.
I love it.
Yeah,
good. Excellent. Yeah. That's the idea. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. And let me repeat this for the CD. Those of you who are listening, that one gentleman said at their church they have their welcome class during Sunday school, and that's where they give them the basic doctrine and some initial theology of the church. Good idea. Yes, sir. Do you? Very good. Excellent.
Making new disciples.
Oh, good. Excellent. Yep. For new disciples. If they're seekers, or this is once they've accepted Christ. I see. Isn't that wonderful? Another church, new disciples class. And that may be, that may meet the need perfectly. I think what I initially had in mind, and I would say either of these can do it, what I initially had in mind was basic Bible, just Bible. So they learn where the books of the Bible are. They learn who wrote the Pentateuch. Generally speaking, how did it, that would be, well, you all know the Pentateuch, right? Anyway, the first five books of the Old Testament, who wrote that? How did that maybe come into existence? Basic stuff. And something of the timeline of the Bible, because a lot of teens don't get that. They get other things that are more topical oriented, but adults then become adults. They have all the little stories, the snories in some cases. They have the stories of Samson and Delilah, or Moses and the bulrushes, or David and Goliath, etc. They have these kind of snapshots, but they don't know the timeline. They don't know who came first, who followed whom. They don't know that, you know, it's Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and Joseph is the reason they went to Israel or to Egypt. And then Moses got them out, and he passed it on to Joshua. You know what I'm saying? The timeline. Adults probably need that introductory stuff. That's a little more targeted, but you can include those in those settings, and they're, or maybe it's a different thing. I don't know. But whatever could fit you, I think. If we help people feel comfortable and get to know the basics, then that is a part of conserving the results. As God leads them to himself, as he draws them to himself, then that one of the reasons that newer people can drop out is they really feel overwhelmed. Other people know too much and they're intimidated. One of the things for adult education they teach us is that adults have a fear of being wrong. They don't want to be wrong. And so when questions are asked, it's easy for them to feel put on the spot. And we actually had a lady who left one of the classes that a friend of mine and I taught. And later I went to her, and her name is Kay. I said, Kay, I miss you in the class. She said, I don't know this stuff. So she was intimidated. She kind of was, didn't feel really comfortable. Like she, it was just too new. And so rather than hang around, it was a little embarrassing for her. So, and we found other ways then to minister to her, and she's doing fine. But anyway, there is an eye to witnessing, at least sharing what God has done for the Christian with the seeker, those kinds of things in this introductory setting. The third one is the involvement setting. These settings in which people are tied into relationships. Some kinds of setting, however you do that, where they are involved in church life and ministry, teaching, leading congregations, only after other people have made a commitment to Christ should they be moved into these settings. These are a little farther along. These would be the serving settings. They would be the deeper fellowship type settings. And worship and Sunday school are in their ideal examples of involvement settings. I love the idea in involvement settings of ministry or service, making that a part. Now, I made a mistake for a number of years, and I saw what happened and kind of slapped myself. Thought, what is going on there? And when we used to think, and this is just maybe me, hopefully you haven't been down this road. I used to think that if people got involved doing something, they would know they're needed and they would feel fine. What I found out, and maybe this is just the changing times, to me, that isn't enough anymore. Now, it's not bad, it's good, but people get connected by relationships, not activity. I'm not saying they shouldn't serve, okay? I'm not saying the activities and the involvement isn't important. I'm saying the thing that caused people to really feel that they are a part is bonding and relating personally with other people. They say that in the first 2 months, a new person at a church has to know 7 people well on a first name basis. Not just know who they are, but know them well. That's why our church committed to small groups, because that is the setting. We invite all new people. In fact, small groups are a part of the welcome class. When you go through those 6 weeks with a pastor, he has me in on one of those weeks. We do small group activities. He has mentioned that this is the way we build community and fellowship. That's why it's a personal church, that they have just felt the impact, the warmth, and the fellowship. So now he's explaining why, and we also give them the how. We don't just say you should. You ought to go to a group, you know, get involved, go find one. But we say, you want to form one? Let's do it. And we do what's called the 8-week experiment. And they commit to 8 weeks. Everybody can do that pretty much. Their schedule, they'll make room for that period of time. Here's what we found. When they do that, they don't ever want to quit. Because they get close and they start communicating at deeper levels. They share their hearts and they've heard each other pray their name. Kinds of things. It's like in the seminar yesterday, I said, how long, or I guess it was maybe this morning, I asked, how long, and you think about this in your church, how long has it been since like halfway through the message, somebody raised their hand and said, excuse me, pastor, would you go over those last two paragraphs? I really didn't get that. Would you talk to me about that some more? Well, let's dialogue. Okay. It's been a long time in our church, fortunately. Okay. Like never, right? Okay. But, you know, in Sunday school, you do that. In groups, you do that. You do a lot of that in groups, okay? So the involvement, that's the kind of setting we're talking about here. All of these are offensive unit functions. Leaders in this unit would involve all the people with spiritual gifts like hospitality and discernment and so on. B, just as important, the defensive unit would concentrate on holding the spiritual line with teaching, discipling. Discipling is a lot more intentional. There's some accountability, right? Or mentoring. Some of you call them mentoring groups. The new thing with navigators is groups of three. And they are saying now that it's excellent if you can have people in church, Sunday school, and a group of three, as well as a group of 12, a regular small group. So this team, the defensive unit people, would include training sessions and seminars as well as discipleship, that kind of thing. And maybe underline this because it's the purpose, to challenge and inspire people to move from being learners to being leaders, being examples. That's the focus or the purpose of this. Now, this is somewhat a refined thinking. Because we'd like that to happen. My sense is it doesn't happen unless we intentionally design it, unless we move people intentionally that way. And maybe do a spiritual gift survey with them and find out what their gift mix, and especially find out what their passion is, and then involve them in that level. And as indispensable or an indispensable part of this defensive unit is small groups. And let me just state, because I believe in Sunday school wholeheartedly, but I also wholeheartedly believe in small groups. There is no way, at least in my view, a growing church can incorporate people into fellowship effectively by chance. I don't think that happens. I don't think it could be. I hope it is, that people come and they just automatically want to be a part. They introduce themselves if other people don't introduce themselves to them and so on. So this is so important. It must intentionally happen. That's the idea behind the caring idea of small groups. The carings are a kind of a unique brand in that they're small groups, kind of a typical home small group, but they're all related to Sunday school classes. They're all connected in some way. So, and that's why Serendipity House, I used to speak for, and they had me write caring small groups side by side. You get it on Amazon.com or from the website that is there in your notes. And it walks churches. I do consulting with churches that, in fact, I want to tell you the story about some that begin to see the importance of this deeper fellowship, this deeper relationship. And they can serve the results by focusing on getting people into groups so that significant interpersonal relationships were developed. The small group Sunday school basic concept is this. The Sunday school has always been a type of small group in broad general terms. However, check this out. Here's some questions. Classes will not grow indefinitely without providing small groups to meet the demands for inclusion and personal interaction. Here's what happens in some classes. Okay? In some classes, Like, would you say an hour is a kind of an average for a class, Sunday school these days? Would you think so? That's my take on it. You always have an introduction. They stand around, drink the coffee, and eat the donuts. I mean, that's what Sunday school's about, you know, right? And that's good. Somebody always opens a class. Could be the teacher. Could be some of the lay people, the leaders in the class. They'll welcome the guests. They'll make the announcements. They'll do the prayer requests. And if your class is like mine has been sometimes, the prayer requests, to list them out, the discussion takes 20 minutes and prayer takes 3. Because what happens is somebody says, I want you to pray for my Uncle Bob. He is really having trouble with his foot. And those are the physical needs are always the first ones mentioned. The first ones mentioned normally are not pray for my neighbor to accept Christ. Okay, so I think we can go to a higher level in our prayer requests. And I'm not being critical of those things. We should. Jesus cares about the physical, right? He does. But the idea is that when somebody says, pray for my Uncle Bob, and somebody else says, wait, is Bob the guy that's the checker at Safeway? Is he your uncle? Yeah. I knew he was some kind of relationship. I knew he was your uncle. He used to be over at Albertsons, right? Yeah, I was at Albertsons for 2 years. You remember when he used to work over there? He actually was a manager there, but what happened? They got cut down in layoffs. Somebody else says, oh, yeah, layoffs. Man, that happened to my sister. She was working down there at TGNY. She got laid off. I mean, it was a terrible thing. I can't believe it. You know what I'm describing there? It's discussion time when we wanted it to be prayer request time. Now, I'm not critical of that because that's interpersonal relationship. I just want to call for a higher level. If we just pray, you see, the devil doesn't mind you talking about praying. He doesn't care. You go to seminars on prayer, right? Just go to all kinds of seminars. It's fine. He won't give you any bit, but just try praying an hour, right? Just like get on your knees and calling out to the Lord, and it's going to be difficult. It's the same thing that happens in the class, and we get sidetracked in this, that, and the other. And it may not be Uncle Bob. It may be, Aunt Susie. It doesn't matter. But we get sidetracked easily and spend a lot of time in discussion and a little time in prayer. I'd rather just start by praying and train the class. You pray something on your mind. Make it one or two sentences. Don't pray around the world. Okay, missionaries will be okay during this time. Okay, not that we shouldn't pray for missionaries, but make it a personal prayer. Father, I ask you today to help me to influence my neighbor for Christ. My neighbor, I don't think, is a Christian. He may be. He's fairly new. I don't really have a clear take on him, but I've begun praying for him. And in that prayer, if you pray for him, God's going to touch somebody else's heart, and they're going to say, I agree with Dave. I pray for his neighbor too. I never met him, but God, somehow draw him to yourself, win him to yourself. Then you move on. Somebody else prays their request. And if nobody picks up on it, that's okay. But everybody knows about it. In other words, by praying about it, you don't lose anything contrasted with just talking about it. But you gain prayer. Does that make sense? Seems like a small thing. It's called conversational prayer. I've written about it in the book, and I got the idea from Rosalind Rinker, Prayer, Conversing with God. I love her idea that prayer often, for many of us, is a one-way street. It's a monologue. It's not a dialogue. It's not interaction. So the idea is let's make it discussion between us and God and each other. That's the idea. Well, next one here, many Sunday school classes have little or no time left for reflection and discussion of the Word. That's what we're getting at. Because it can take so much time with welcoming people. It's all good. Making announcements, all good. Nothing wrong with any of that. Amen? An hour class, you might end up with 20 or 30 minutes. And the class itself may end up becoming, I wouldn't say superficial, but I would say rushed. And maybe can't get into some more significant things about growing in grace and knowledge. And then, once classes are done with welcome and guest announcement, it's what I've put here, some may have a half an hour. It may cut that down. And by accelerating the prayer time to not having the request but just praying, and I'll be honest with you, some people are really scared of that. They're really afraid. If I don't have requests, I may leave somebody out. You wouldn't want somebody to be left out. I would agree with that too, wouldn't you? But you can assure them that as long as we all feel comfortable praying, if that's okay, if you know your people love the Lord and they're comfortable praying, that when they pray, somebody else will agree with them. They have heard, but it's not been discussion about it. It's been prayer about it. You see what that does? It kind of lifts it to a higher level. That's what we're trying to do. Okay? Now, groups will form. Oh, yeah. This is true, right? Groups will form whether you plan for them to or not. Now, some of them that form you don't plan to, we call cliques. There's a name for that. Or families. Some families are really tight. Nothing wrong with that. But we're a part of a bigger family. Some small groups form around family structures that I've put here. Other small groups form around common backgrounds. It could be that some of them have lived in another town or gone to another church, and they come to your church, and now they relate. Some, or still more groups, form around age groups and interests. I want to suggest this is one of the strongest, because when you form around age groups and interests, it's not about history. It's not about where you used to live or who your family is. It's about the interests in your life. It's about your concern or maybe your place in life, kind of a thing. Whether we organize them and bless them or not, small groups form. Wisdom dictates that we train leaders and organize groups in cooperation with the Sunday school as around the Great Commission purpose. Now, John Mark Terry wrote this. Small groups are important because they provide people with a sense of belonging. Relationships are essential, he says, to attracting and retaining church members. Isn't that interesting? Would you underline that sentence if you believe it? Relationships are essential to attracting and retaining church members in small groups, provide an ideal setting for the development of personal relationships. I believe that. I believe it's like ideal because it's not restricted by space. Many of our Sunday schools are restricted by space or time, right? Small groups aren't. Now, there are some limits. There are some limits to small groups. We know at this point that a church probably, as far as we know, cannot get any bigger than 600,000 in regular attendance. Okay, there is a church, Seoul, Korea. You've probably already heard about it, many of you. 600,000 in that congregation. Okay, that church, you can go to church only twice a month. The rest of the time, you have church in your small groups, and the church seats 35,000. Okay, they have 7 services every weekend. Okay, now we're talking light years ahead of you and me, right? Okay, and that's not good or bad. The point is, they've done it with small groups. Okay, everybody in that church is it's Paul Youngie Cho's church in Seoul, Korea. And powerful, has made impact worldwide. One of the first churches it influenced was a guy named Dale Galloway, who pastored New Hope Church in Portland, Oregon. Some of you have heard about New Hope and about the small group ministry there. And formed a remarkable congregation out of nothing. I mean, him and the Bible and his wife. I mean, that's what they had. They had an organ, I believe, they played some music on. They could move it in and out on a trailer. And Galloway saw that church form into a remarkable congregation in a short time with groups. So it's kind of saying to us that in this is an impersonal day. It's a technological world. And people probably are longing for relationships. So the groups meet those needs at a deeper level. How small is a small group? It is a common error to mistake the Sunday school for groups, especially when classes are not very big. You know, somebody says, I've got a class of 12 people. I bet that's a small group. And the way a group or a class functions, it should be the word in there, the way a group or class functions determines whether it is a group or a class, not the number of people. Okay? Let's talk about it for a minute. What's the difference? Here are 6 questions that you can ask yourself about your Sunday school class if it is a small one. The difference between a class and a small group is determined by a combination of these 6 things. So check this out. And there is a list in your notes, isn't there? Yeah. Just mark a circle or put a little check in that box. Read through those 6 items now about your class. What would you say they is true of the class you attend right now? Okay, take a minute and do that. Well, wait just a moment. There should be 6 of them, I think, right? Yeah, just put a check by those that apply to you. Okay, when you finish, how many of you are still working on it? Slip your hand up real quickly. Still working? Oh, you've got it done? You're done? Oh, good. Okay. Ah, very smart class, I see. Okay, here I'm standing around wasting your time. Okay, if you check, count the number, the total, how many of you would say I had four or more checked? Would you raise your hand? Oh, one? Okay. How many say I had five or more checked? How many six or more? Or, well, there weren't more than six. How many would say, okay, so most of you had like four. How many had checked four? How many checked three? Okay, two of you on three of you on three. How many of you checked two? Oh, quite a few more. And how many of you checked one? Okay, now, here's the idea. If you checked at least four of these, you're about your Sunday school class, you're a group. Otherwise, enjoy your class. Do you? Was that the same number?
We checked the same thing.
How many for each of you?
Two.
Oh, two? Okay, so you knew. So, basically, you have a class. Do you follow what I'm saying? In other words, the arrangement of the chair, who does most of the talking, those kinds of things, the way it functions determines whether it's a class or a group. I've had a lot of people who have said, well, we have 14 or we have 15 in our class, so we are a group, right? We are a small group. And I would say, well, you're a small class, but it depends on how you function as to whether you're a group or not. See, with a group, there's interaction. You see each other. Like if we were to form a group or discuss in this particular class and somebody here in the front wanted to share a need with somebody else, they'd have to turn 180 degrees around. If somebody back there wanted to share, they're just going to talk to the back of people's heads. See? So in a group, there should be in a circle, that kind of thing. Those are the dynamics. How it functions determines whether it's a class or a group, not how many people happen to go there. Okay? There are a number of churches today. I love this. Here are some true, some very powerful, actual situations. There are a number of churches today that are extremely effective in growing both with Sunday school and small groups. Listen to these stories. Skyline Wesleyan, Pastor Jim Garlow is a friend of mine. Skyline Wesleyan in San Diego started 18, Pastor Garlow told me, 18 new Sunday school classes within a three-year period. And still has a growing small group ministry, according to Jim. Isn't that interesting? A dramatically growing church. Some of you may know the Skyline West. It's where John Maxwell was for a number of years and Orville Butcher before him. Christ Fellowship, Oilton, Oklahoma. 260 worshipers, a strong growing Sunday school. Within 1 year, they had me come down. I consulted with them, and we did. It's a six-month deal to get groups started. And they, within 1 year, they ended up with more people in small groups being ministered to than they used to have Sunday nights. Now, what the pastor said to me was that Sunday night service in their church had lost its significance. It was kind of warmed over Sunday morning. It was kind of relaxed, informal, wasn't as structured, that kind of not high energy and so on. He said it had just lost our... Now, here's what he said. We had about 110 people coming Sunday nights. When we started small groups, there were, in a matter of 2 to 3 months, there were 135 people who started coming to small groups. It used to be that in Sunday night, there were about 10 people involved in ministering. His first training, listen to this, he had over 70 people that I trained, and it's in Oklahoma, church in Oklahoma. There were over 70 people that went through training to be lay pastors or to shepherd their small group ministry. He said, now I've got about 40 people involved leading and hosting those groups. I used to have 10, so that the involvement ratio went way up. He said, I'm reaching 25 people more with groups than I ever did in Sunday night service. Why wouldn't I just cancel Sunday night and go to groups? I said, that's your decision. I wouldn't recommend one way or the other, but if your people are for it, he said, our people are for it. All they had to do was to realize that they could be functioning with purpose at a deeper level and providing something for their people that had been missing because they had two services that were Sunday morning, Sunday night, that were very much alike. Okay, and they were really wrestling to keep the involvement up. I was there one Sunday night, and I preached for him, and it was a good crowd and stuff, but not long after that, he said, we're reaching more people. We're involving more in leadership and ministry. Why would I hold on to the old when I could get the new and do better? You know, okay. I had a hard time saying you shouldn't do it. You know what I'm saying? So that was his church. I don't go around recommending it, but it was an interesting story. Central Community Church in Wichita, Kansas. It has a 16-year-old small group ministry with over 80 small groups and has the largest Sunday school in its denomination. Both have grown well. An interesting story at Central Community Church. Hamburg Wesleyan. I consulted for Hamburg Wesleyan in Buffalo, New York. It grew by 104. It's a remarkable story. 140% per decade for over a 20-year period. Sunday school, and has a growing small groups ministry. And the church is cited by Elmer Towns as one of the most effective churches in America today. A remarkable, remarkable story at that church. That's outside Buffalo, New York. And the church growing like, okay. Any church that has found a balance between teaching and disciple ministry will make an impact on its community. And when a church develops that church is a winner. Now, when we get to the bottom line of this thing, what does all of this mean? The bottom line, once we have a vision for winning those who need the Lord and helping them to become fully devoted followers of Christ, then we must put faith to our faith. We must resolve to live out the vision with determination regardless of the obstacles. In other words, we want to help them stay connected at the significant levels. It includes teaching, of course, but it also, and involvement, ministry, but it also includes relationships and fellowship. We're going to look at a film clip from, Kevin Costner. Field of Dreams, you remember the story? Watch this and then make some observations about what's going on.
You're interrupting the game, Mark. Great. It's time to It's not a fantasy, Mark. They're real.
Who is real?
She was Joe Jackson, the White Sox, all of them.
You mean?
No, can't see any of
that. Who was this? Elvis? Have a deal to offer you that's going to allow you to stay on the land.
Daddy, you don't have to sell the farm.
Let us buy you out. We'll leave the house. You can live on it rent free as long
as you want. What about the baseball?
Ray, do you realize how much this land is worth?
Yeah. $2,200 an acre.
Well, and you got to realize we can't keep a useless baseball diamond in the middle of rich farmland.
Read my lips, Mark. We're staying, all right? We're staying.
Ray, you're bankrupt. I'm offering you a way to keep your home because I love my sister. Now, my partners, Ray, they don't give it by you, and they're ready to foreclose right now.
Daddy, we don't have to sell the farm.
Karen, please.
Just wait. Wait.
People will come.
What people, sweetheart?
From all over. They'll just decide to take a vacation soon, and they'll come to Iowa City. You think it's really boring, so they'll drive up and want to pay us, like buying a ticket.
You're not seriously listening to this, are you?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Why would anybody pay money to come here?
To watch the game. It would be just like when they were little kids, a long time ago, and they'll watch the game and remember what it was like.
What is she talking about?
People will come.
All right. This is fascinating. It is. But the fact remains is that you don't have the money to bring the mortgage up to date, so you're still going to have to sell. I'm sorry. We got no choice.
Ray. People will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. Into the driveway, not really sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. But it is money they have, and peace of their life.
Ray, just sign the papers.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers.
sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. Find you have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines. But they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they watched the game. And it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick that I have to brush them away from their faces.
Ray, when the bank opens in the morning, they'll foreclose.
People will come, Ray.
You're broke, Ray. You sell now or you lose everything.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. Baseball. Come on, time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us all that once was good, and it could be again. People will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
Okay. What is the, what's, is there tension in this scene? What's the tension over?
Land.
Over what?
Money.
Money and land. And land? Something else? People? It's the money, the land, farming. The history compared with, it's in tension with Ray's faith and vision.
Yeah, faith.
Uh-huh. What his daughter said. She began to see it. Terrence Mann, the James Earl Jones character, he saw it. You notice when he talked, the imaginary baseball players begin. Some people can't. My wife can't watch it. What does that mean? I mean, they're there, aren't they? What, you know? Some of us are kind of, you know, material or not materialistic, but we like to, you know, if it's real, if it could happen and stuff. She said, "That could that happen?" Well, I don't know. Probably not. But it's interesting. What price had he paid to see the vision become reality? Two or three things that come to my mind. What price had Ray made? What was the cost of seeing this happen, other than the dollars?
Yeah, he had belief in
faith. Believe, had faith, okay. What was the other cost? Good.
He had to lose the
His
faith.
Uh-huh. Cost. Yeah, his faith and not what just the other people said. Yeah, the cost of losing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and respect maybe in the community. Here's this guy that owns this rich farmland, and he's doing a baseball field, you know? It's kind of like, if you will build it, they will come. Remember that?
Yeah.
That's a part of the story. It's a great movie. What were the obstacles? What is he facing? What's, right now, what is the pressure about? Foreclosure. Yeah, the bank. It's his brother-in-law who's on the bank deal. He says, we have no other choice. Gives him the foreclosure papers, you know? Okay. What three or four obstacles can you anticipate as you build a Great Commission Sunday School, as you strive to do whatever God leads you to do, whether it's a clinic or small groups or whatever we've talked about? What kind of obstacles or barriers, what could you anticipate?
Some people don't like change.
Right. Right. Some people don't like change, he said. What else?
Fear.
Yeah, fear of the change. Yes, not necessarily they're opposed to it. They just don't know what is involved, what it'll mean. Okay? Okay? Phoebe Bell was afraid of loss.
Losing a member.
Uh-huh. She was afraid, the one that said, I hope we never grow. She was afraid, I lose this closeness. Now, that's one of the reasons that I committed to small groups. Because it dawned on me that if we gave everybody a setting to really get a tight, close relationship, they wouldn't be afraid of how big the church goes.
No.
They don't care. You know, in fact, a number of years ago, you might have heard there's a pastor of a little tiny church down there in the LA area. Bob Schuller, you might have heard the guy's name. Okay. He did a national survey. His organization did. And they found out that if a church of any size, the average number of people that anyone knows is 68. It doesn't matter if the church is 68 or 6,800. That's the average number in all sizes of churches that the person knows. We're talking about closely, first name basis, where they actually are involved week by week in their lives. Not they don't know who the names are of more than 68. You follow what he's saying? And that stands out to me. I thought, ooh, that's powerful. That means that knowing a few people really well is important, regardless of the church size. But when people know, by having small groups as well as Sunday school, that they are going to always have this closeness, okay, then that the church gets bigger doesn't bother them. That's great. Bring them on. We'll start more groups, you know. Just keep that vision going. So we've come full circle. Okay, is this next in your notes? I think this is okay. From discussing the importance of the Great Commission is kind of the foundation, and specifically the make disciples. We started today with Matthew 28, 19 and 20. Remember that was the first verse we looked at. And the imperative there, you remember the two words that are in the imperative in that scripture. Remember what they are? Guys, you preachers have probably you've taught, pardon? Teach definitely is there. Yeah, make disciples. Now, teaching and going is in there. Baptizing is in there. But they're all gerunds. They're ing. While you're teaching, while you're baptizing, while you're going, make disciples. That's the imperative. That's a command. That's the mandate of the master. Amen? And make disciples. Doesn't mean you force them to become disciples, but you inspire them and you challenge. And that is exactly what we are instructed to do in the Great Commission. In the first place, to make disciples. That's what God has required of us. Well, I'm only going to be down at the booth for another 30 minutes, so this didn't help a lot. But there are a couple of things. The giveaway, we already gave them. If you signed up for the free book, by the way, we drew that at noon. Stop by there and see if you won. This is actually now, Kathy's doing another special with this. You get Remarkable Women if you buy something else. Stop by there and we'll find out. But anyway, that's kind of changed. I didn't realize we'd have to fly back so early. Thanks for coming. Here are some things, and I hope these are in your notes. If you have questions, please don't hesitate to give me a call or get on the internet and email me. I'd be glad to consult with you or help you any way I can. And if you need to know more about how to run Sunday schools alongside with our small groups alongside with the Sunday school, the one book I brought is the rest of these have all sold out. So I do have one of these left. There is small group training. There's a workbook now that's out. And the best thing about this, I wrote it, but I mean, other than that, the best thing about it is that there is now a CD that has all of this training in a PowerPoint presentation. The whole thing is done for you. When I had to create this, it took me hours. This is 8 hours of training. You can do it 1 hour at a time, or you can do it, you know, a number of Wednesday nights with your small group leaders, or you can do it once a month with them. It doesn't matter. But it'll cover all the basics of small groups, plus the concepts and the biblical foundation behind small groups. It's basically, if you don't even have a group, but you'd like to start a few, this is available for you. And they always do a special here. Vessel Press does a thing where I think theirs are $2 off, something like that. Of course, you don't pay any ship. And then the other deal is like $9 off. The CD, because you get the copyright, you get it, put it in your computer on your PowerPoint program, and then you change it to fit your local church. So if your congregation uses the term cell group, home group, life group, caring, doesn't matter. You fill that in wherever, just change it, just edit it like any PowerPoint program. If your leader is called a facilitator, a head dude, you know, is called the shepherd, the pastor, the lay pastor of the small group, that doesn't matter. You can change all of that, put your church name, your church logo in the training. So it can all be personalized. Isn't that great? I think it's really, really cool, and I'm glad. And it's usually $59. I think it's $50 here. I've got one of those left. Thank you so much for coming, and you're just actually a great group. Give yourself a hand. Appreciate you staying awake in most cases, and thanks for coming.